This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Cheech and Chong are to comedy what The Grateful Dead are to rock or Gilbert Shelton to comics. Starting in the early 70s, Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong performed classic counterculture routines about hippies, sex, and most notably, their love of marijuana. They went on to pioneer the stoner movie with Up in Smoke. The act broke up in the 1980s, but reformed a couple of years ago. These days, Cheech and Chong are back on tour, still laughing, but also teaming up with other advocates for the legalization of marijuana. Today, Cheech and Chong and the Get It Legal Tour. Later in the hour, Bernard Cornwell, the author of the Richard Sharp and Saxon Tales novels, joins us. But first, if you have questions for Cheech and Chong, we know many of you are fans, but actual questions, please give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Richard Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong join us from our studios at NPR West in California. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Well, it's nice to be had.
Isn't it?
Really nice to be here.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that little sound you just made, Tommy. Was your act from the very beginning based on pot and counterculture?
No, actually, we started in a strip bar, so strip club, so we did all the titties and buttocks jokes.
Yeah, mostly sex.
A lot of sex jokes.
So, really inheritors of the burlesque tradition.
Yeah, yes. That's what we kind of view ourselves as, hippie burlesque.
Yeah, and then when we started doing concerts, especially in Southern California, we had to accommodate our audiences, which were very much involved in the magic weed.
And Chicanos, and then sometimes those overlapped.
And yeah. Sometimes those overlapped, astonishing as that may be. In the meantime, it's interesting. You started out in clubs, but really made your reputation, as you say, playing concert halls along with bands. Of course, you played some music yourselves, too.
Well, thanks to Lou Adler, we got a recording contract. 1971 did a hit single called Dave's Not Here. And it put us on the map, and then we started touring behind that, and we hadn't stopped since.
We were both always musicians most of our lives.
And that kind of experience, though, is very different from the career arc you see of most comedians who followed in your wake.
Well, we're like the magic herb, you know. We're just getting better every year.
Yeah, really better.
Really.
And more popular.
And more popular. Well, except for that, 25-year or so hiatus between the times.
Well, sometimes you need the fields to lie fallow in order to gain nutrients.
I wonder, you guys obviously work together for a long time. Then you work separately for a long time. Is it easier to work together or is it more easier to work by yourself?
Well, it's much easier together.
Yeah, you know? When we came back last year to start doing this, we didn't really even rehearse. We just kind of talked about what we're going to do and then went on stage and did it. And we've been up to apart 25 seconds, not 25 years.
We rehearsed one time, years ago when we first started our career. And that came out with a record called Dave's Not Here. That was a rehearsal. And that was really the only rehearsal we've ever done. We talk about it, but then we end up, we save it for the camera.
Yeah. But is this just the benefit of having worked together all those years, or certainly when you started out, did you have written routines?
No.
No, we've always been improvisational from the start, you know.
When you're a couple of hippies working in a strip club, you got to think on your feet, bro.
And if you own the club, you can do anything you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you never quite got to that point, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy's family owned the club.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So that meant there was a certain tolerance for the nights things didn't go quite so well.
That's right. That's right. And, so we've always been sort of ready to move with the audience, whatever the audience is in. We've always, our first aim is to
entertain.
Help me.
Entertain the audience.
Help me entertain
in front
the
of
audience. Yeah, that's it.
Those wonderful drunk hockey players.
going back to the early days when you were starting to work together, people forget how subversive your humor really was. And I wonder whether you saw yourselves as creating some space for other people who were around at the same time, the Smothers Brothers, a little more straight-laced, but subversive in their own way.
I thought we were kind of just continuing the tradition, not only of that kind of material, but also the comedy duo tradition that has kind of laid fallow since our demise.
And plus, we started when we came down to L.A. in 1970, there were no comedy clubs. And there was really nowhere to work. There was folk clubs.
Yeah, folk clubs.
And black clubs, black R&B clubs, and that's the clubs that we started in.
The big difference is the black clubs paid American money, white clubs didn't.
You did get paid when you worked in the white clubs.
We worked a lot of black clubs.
It was the freebie, you know. You can do a free set.
Hoot night. That's right. Yeah, free mic night, that sort of thing.
You were getting a showcase
to be yourself.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we were.
We're talking with Cheech and Chong today, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. They're currently touring on the Get It Legal tour. And let's begin with a call from Evie. Evie calling from Grand Junction in Colorado. Hello, Evie. Are you there? I think Evie's...
It's a stoner.
Evie Levy.
Hasn't figured out that they're on the air. Oh, man, that sounds like me.
Wow. Let's go to... this is Stuart. Stuart with us from Covington in Kentucky.
Yes. My question is regarding your guys' kind of approach to the filmmaking when you first started out, whether you were taking it really seriously and were trying to be hands-on with everything, or whether you kind of were just along for the ride and were writing the scripts and just kind of like to know more about that.
Oh, no, we were very hands-on in every aspect of it, you know, but it was just we came at it with an improvisational attitude. So it may have seemed casual, but it was anything but.
Well, we used the Robert Altman approach. In fact, we used his people. When we did our first Up in Smoke, we used all of Robert Altman's approach. And he, you know, he's the one that did MASH, and he had that let everybody talk at the same time approach.
Yeah.
And we like that approach.
And hope to get a microphone there.
Exactly.
How did that movie come about? How did it happen that somebody was willing to invest a whole lot of money in the concept of a stoner movie?
Well, it was a scam.
The whole lot of money was, we did it for less than $1 million. I think the budget was less than 900.
$800,000.
It was 800,000.
Well, a dollar was a dollar back in those days.
At the end of the day. Well, this is when they were doing Heaven's Gate,
yeah,
which was costing $40 million. And we ended up being number one box office for the whole year.
Yeah,
I think.
What happened is we had this long album career that all our albums went to number one. We had this big successful concert tour, and at the height of it, we said we got to get into movies, and so we took the time off and start writing Up in Smoke.
And this was when we turned down. NBC offered us big money for it.
They offered us the Jay Leno show.
No, they offered us a show called Chico and the Man. Which ended up being Chico and the Man.
Well,
and
that turned out to be Freddie Prinze, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jimmy Comax followed us around for 3 months, our live show, and making notes, and he actually used our act to do Chico and the Man. Yeah. But we turned it down because we knew that we would our act would play much better on the big screen.
Yeah.
And followed that up with Still Smokin' and other other films, and you guys were at the top, so why did you break up?
We got bored.
Couldn't stand each other.
We got rich. You know what happened? We got rich, and we started staying in separate trailers. And then we started, you know, because that's how we would rehearse. We'd get together before an act and say, hey, what's up, man? Let's do this and let's do that. And when we got separated, then we started having people talk for us. You know, he'd have his manager. I had my manager.
Oh, your people would talk to his people?
That's right. That's right.
We'd only worked if we roomed together.
Yeah.
You know? But something about the attraction.
We also kind of ran the string out. You know, everybody's got a string, and we ran it out. You know, like everybody, you know,
every comic that you look out there, whether it be Robin Williams or Jim Carrey or Steve Carell or Cheech and Chong, basically at when they're the most successful, they have like six movies.
Yeah.
And then the public gets tired of them because there's a new generation that needs their own heroes.
Plus, you're competing against your best movie. Everybody keeps, you know, comparing your latest stuff for, well, it wasn't as good as Up in Smoke, you know, that kind
right.
of thing.
Second Harold and Kumar, nowhere near as good as the first one. Yeah.
That's the way it is.
So you're one of those kind of guys.
And so what we did, instead of, you know, beating a dead horse, we just split. Yeah. And Cheech went on, you know, and he did his career, and I went on and I learned how to do stand-up on my own. And then I incorporated my wife, Shelby, into the act. And so now we're back together, and there's three of us, you know. Well, actually four, counting Cheech's son, Joey. And so we got a little family, Cheech and Chong and the Family Stone.
Yeah.
let's get Chris on the line. Chris calling us from Baton Rouge.
Oh, am I on?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay.
We don't know what you're on, but you're on.
Just wanted to say I'm a great fan. I thought your albums were awesome, even better than your movies.
Oh, thank you.
But my question is, other than the marijuana jokes, which are obviously, you know, kind of transcend time, what's your strategy for comedy to reach a generation that you really haven't grown up in and is completely different than the 70s and 80s?
Just do what we do and, you know, let them discover us. You know, they have to come to us. We've always been really good at entertaining young kids. Yeah. For some reason, you know, 8-year-olds, we get our album and just love it. You know, they didn't understand.
They speaks never to the sophistication of your humor.
Yeah, yeah, they never understood the doper parts.
Yeah.
But they sure understood the poop jokes. You know? So we have a lot of those.
And they like funny voices.
Mary Elephant jokes or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's and our strategy.
Gosh, those will never go anywhere in American entertainment.
Carol Burnett once stole our bit.
Yeah, she used to do Sister Mary Elephant.
Shut up.
Chris, have you managed to catch the new act yet?
No, I saw you all when you were on, I think it was Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you guys there, and you did the Mexican-American song, which was absolutely fabulous. And, I mean, I'm pushing 35, and I'd definitely go and see you all if you came into Baton Rouge.
We're coming to somewhere around, I think maybe even Baton Rouge.
We're coming to a city near you.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Just hold on. We'll be everywhere.
Stay tuned, Chris.
Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. We're talking today with Cheech and Chong, and we'll have more about their careers, stand-up comedy, and the Get It Legal Tour in just a moment. More of your calls as well. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our guests today, Cheech and Chong. Many of us might have their albums still tucked into our bookshelves, Comedy Bits and Some Hilarious Songs, Basketball Jones and Born in East L.A., to name just two. Richard Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong are back together again and on tour in the middle of the Get It Legal Tour, as a matter of fact. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. If you'd like to talk with Cheech and Chong about their career, their comedy, or their new tour, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And the Get It Legal Tour, is the point of this to legalize marijuana for any purposes or medical marijuana?
No, just legalize it so I can get off my felony conviction. Basically, that's what we're trying to do.
I would like
looking
to like
for a presidential pardon there, man.
Yes, yes.
We would like to legalize it for any purpose eventually. It's quasi-legal now. It's kind of like immigration. Mexicans are quasi-legal.
The way the drug laws are now, it depends on who's in power. You know, the Republicans get in, they take it to the letter, you know, they put, like Reagan did, you know, taking people's yacht because they found a joint on it, you know. And then Bush, you know, was very famous for busting me for a bong, you know. And so
paraphernalia, I think, was the word they used. Yeah.
But we got to stop this mess, you know. You figure it out. It's been proven to help people with MS, with cancer, with glaucoma, with bulimia. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And why can't people, you know, and the other side says, well, you know, what if little kids get it? You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, what if little kids get it? And it's also been proven to mess up some people's lives. Addicts have a hard time with it.
So does beer, but that's legal. Mm-hmm. We should have a referendum, beer or weed.
Well, but even like when I was in prison, people with OxyContin, which is legal, addiction.
Except you could only get it with a prescription.
They had a hard time.
They had a hard time
kicking that drug, The only people that never had any problem were potheads, because I smoked pot all my life for 50 years, and then I had to go to jail and I had to quit. And I quit with no problems. And the only problem I had, I developed a prostate problem, which I've cured now by smoking pot. So, it has to be legal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was legal in China for 5,000 years, used as medicine, been used as medicine in Mexico forever, South America forever, and we have to get on that,
Nevertheless, some people do have problems. Obviously, some people have problems with alcohol, too. As you point out, it's legal. Mm-hmm. Why create the possibility of more problems, which
it's
is what the last two drug czars have said.
It's people medicine. People want a socially accepted intoxicant since the Bible. I mean, it doesn't really matter. They're going to do it anyways because it's part of the human process.
And it's also a medical thing, like preventive medicine, for instance, like basketball players that, got a high adrenaline rush, after the game, they'll smoke up and they'll calm down. Policemen, instead of becoming an alcoholic, they become potheads and they calm themselves down. Airline pilots, it's been known that airline pilots, a guy in Air Canada, it's Canadian Airlines, he got caught smoking a joint. He had the best on-time record of the whole airlines, and yet they fired him because they caught him smoking a joint.
Well, partly because what he was doing was illegal, and
anyway, being black was illegal too. like there was a time when a black man couldn't sit on a bus. So it's the same law.
All right, let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Tyler's calling from Hay Fork in California.
Hi, Cheech and Chong. How are you doing today?
Hi.
So I'm a medical marijuana patient in California, and cool. I wanted to ask your opinion on the legalization attempt here, which is Assembly Bill 390, whether they think it's a comprehensive bill and if it'll actually work.
I hope it will. It's coming before Congress, the state Congress, and hopefully we'll get enough supporters to put it on the bill and put it to a vote. I think that if any of these measures are put to a vote, the polls indicate that the majority do favor legalization.
Yeah. I like they also put a moratorium, the Los Angeles City Council came up with a plan to allow 70 care dispensaries to operate in Los Angeles.
That down from 1,000 that are operating.
Well,
now.
That's a great, great, great step ahead, because it's like playing chess, We got it. We got the opposition checkmated now. We can operate 70 dispensaries.
Wait a minute. Nice you went start. From 1,000 legal dispensaries to 70. This is a step forward for your cause?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
We own half of them.
Hey, no, listen, put it this way. We went from going to jail a patient going to jail for smoking it to be able to go to one of the 70 dispensaries and get it legally. That's a big step forward.
Our last at least three presidents have admitted smoking marijuana. Yeah. And our governor, current governor,
and the first
time with Tommy Chong. So.
And the first one used to grow it.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
Do you think that the passing of Assembly Bill 390 would somehow mess with the medical marijuana patients, and don't you think it would kind of cancel it out?
No, I don't think so. I think it widens the area. I mean, it's more or less of a wedge that's being inserted in the politic body, and I think it'll open the door for more.
All right.
We're almost getting to be at a tipping point for the number of states that have legalized. We're at 14 right now with New Jersey passing legalization of medical marijuana. So it'll just be a matter of time.
Maryland might be next. Here's an email that we have from James in Sebastopol, California. And he says, Cheech Marin has amassed a wonderful collection of Chicano art. He owns several pieces by one of my favorite Chicano artists, George Yepes. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yepes.
I'd like to ask him how he got started collecting and what he looks for in these purchases.
I was a fan of art ever since I was a little kid. Like 11, 12, I started studying art. And when I discovered the Chicano painters, I recognized that they were really great painters, and I started collecting their work. And what I look for when I see a piece of art for the first time is some kind of emotional, intellectual experience that it's a combination of both of those things, and it's informed by my knowledge and something new that I see that the artist is doing.
Let's see if we get Russell on the line. And Russell's calling from Wolfham in Massachusetts.
Hey, Dave there?
Yeah, he's under the table.
Dave's not here, man.
Oh, you might have to explain that to some of our callers.
Hey, just quick question. When you guys come to Boston, Massachusetts?
We were there last year.
Oh, I missed you.
We'll be back there sometime.
Yeah. Right after the Celtics win another NBA pennant, so maybe not.
I don't know if I'll still be alive.
No, we'll be there. We'll be there.
We'll be there. Coming.
We'll be there
All
somewhere.
Right, guys. You're great. I love you.
Thanks for
Thank
the call,
Thank you very
Russell.
Much.
This email from Manuel in San Antonio. The Corsican Brothers movie is one of my favorite Cheech and Chong films. What was the genesis of that movie script? Are there scripts, movies that you turned down that you regret not taking?
The Corsican Brothers was our first and last non-smoking, non-dope movie.
Yeah.
And it's a favorite of a lot of people. And we had a lot of fun doing it.
So who was the original author of that, Corsican Brothers?
Dumas or something?
No, it was Victor Hugo, I believe.
Could have been.
Wrote the original. And it's been made and remade and made again under many guises over the years. We were just the latest of it.
Yeah, and halfway through the movie, the movie company started sending me hash pipes. Can you put some dope in there? But we made a deal, you know, that we were going to do a movie without dope.
It is Alexander Dumas.
Yeah.
And we
Alexander Dumas.
I said it.
Yeah,
won. I won. So movies we regretted. I wanted to do The Cisco Kid, but the Cheech had split by then, so we didn't do it.
This from Joyce in Davis, California. My father has made me and my siblings huge fans of yours. Thanks for all your work. What are your favorite stoner movies besides yours of all time?
I like Napoleon Dynamite. Although it's not, strictly speaking, a doper movie, I don't think it has to have dope in it to be a doper movie.
No, it doesn't.
I think it has to be the doper attitude, you know, the kind of a half a beat late.
I'll tell you when you want to get high and watch is Lolita.
Ooh.
Oh, that was a funny. Peter Sellers is incredible. In there. A lot of good humor in that one. Yeah. But that's the magic of a pot, man. You can make any movie your favorite movie if you got your favorite bud.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ramon. Ramon with us from Columbus.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan, and I love your guys' movies and CDs and stuff. But I was just wondering, if you guys weren't successful with your comedy and movie careers, what would you see yourselves doing today?
I'd be a congressman.
I'd be a roofer.
So it's from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, that was the only job I could get with my education.
Yeah,
the roofer. We're hiring. Come on up here.
Yeah, and as a congressman, I could just say anything. Didn't have to be rooted in truth or reality or
any of those things.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ramon. What'd you say?
You could be a newscaster.
All right. Thanks very much.
Man.
Thanks very much for the phone call. The comedy business has changed tremendously since you guys were last out in the 1980s. What kinds of clubs are you playing now?
We're mostly all playing concerts and
Indian casinos.
Indian casinos, you know. Yeah.
So these are much bigger rooms than someplace like the Improv.
Yeah. No, we haven't played those for 40 years.
Forever. We did when we first got back. We played the comedy club in
The Comedy Store in La Jolla.
Yeah,
just to try out the material.
Well, that's an opportunity to, excuse the expression, showcase and see if your act was working.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Was there any doubt that you could that it would still the chemistry would still be there?
Not by us, by the Live Nation, the people that were paying the big bucks. They were a little nervous, you know.
Everybody else was nervous, but us. We were totally calm. You know, like, okay, I know.
And even though Cheech and I weren't speaking that much, they were a little worried. But as soon as we got on stage, man, all that other stuff just went away, and everything just flowed real nice.
It is amazing to do a comedy team. It requires so much extracurricular stuff, so much compromise, so much intuitiveness to know what the other guy is doing. That's why it's so hard to do it. And you don't see any comedy teams right now. It has to be a natural chemistry, and we were lucky enough to have
that. There's one forming.
What?
Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck. They're going to go on tour.
When you say compromise, what do you mean by compromise? What do you have to give up?
Any great team are usually diametrically opposed in who they are and what they think. You look at Mick Jagger and Keith Richards or any of those kind of teams. They represent both ends of the spectrum, and where they meet and where they conflict in the middle, the thing that springs out of that is their art.
Well, normally you see in comedy teams, at least the famous ones that we're all familiar with, the Laurel and Hardy or even Burns and Allen, one's the straight man and one's the buffoon.
Yeah. We were both straight men.
And both buffoons. Yeah.
And buffoons too.
Yeah.
We're talking to Cheech and Chong. They're on the Get It Legal Tour. They're at NPR West in Culver City, California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Barry on the line. Barry's calling us from Cleveland Park in Kansas.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I've admired your work over the years so much, I even named my dog after your Big Bamboo album.
Really?
What do you call him? Joint?
The album. Whose idea was it to put that extra paper in there?
That was a guy named Craig Braun, who was a graphic designer. He brought it to Lou Adler, and it seemed like a natural fit.
Oh, it was great. I get letters from the Big Bamboo cigarette paper
the
company.
Airs?
Yeah,
I get papers.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
I don't use papers.
Yeah, use it to paper in my bathroom.
I use pipes.
Barry, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
and
it.
Volcanoes.
What do you guys see as the future now? You are 25 years apart, about a year or so back together now. Are you going to keep working together or go back on individual projects?
We're going to probably end up in the SAG old age home for actors. That's the future I see.
The Screen Actors Guild,
Medical marijuana concession for old age homes.
You might do pretty well there.
We got a movie. We're working on a movie. We're working on an animated We animated all our
early bits,
our record bits, and
we have a concert movie of the last tour coming out on April 20th,
420. And we got alimony payments got to make, and we got
grandkids to raise.
Kids to raise. I got a son that won't leave home. So
that's a problem nobody else has.
Yeah.
Do you see the same kind of subversiveness that you came up with in comedy today?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, like who? Yeah. Not at all.
practically all the comedians, you know, they got a pot bit in there. You know, you see it in the movies a lot. You see mainstream, like what was that Meryl Streep movie with?
It's
Alec
Complicated.
Baldwin? Complicated
or the, Weeds.
The
or...
best, the best scene in the whole movie was them getting high.
Don't give it away.
Too bad.
You can't give that away.
Let's see, comedians now. Yeah, I watch a lot of comedians. Wanda Sipes. Probably one of the best. She's genius, and she's there. You know, it's an ongoing thing. You know,
yeah.
Comedy Central seems to have changed the business a lot, though.
Yeah, very much. Yeah,
that's where you go to get your news. You go to the Daily Show. You can't watch anybody else. The Daily Show is more ahead of everybody else. You know.
And I like it that they're an outpost for a lot of comedy, of different kinds of comedy. Yeah.
But in the old days, it was the acme to get on, the Carson Show, the Tonight Show. Sort of stuff is that sort of stuff still that important?
No, because he was the only guy. You know, he was the only guy out there. Yeah. And we were never on the Carson Show.
Yeah, they didn't want us on. In fact, we're actually...
If you had done a drunk act, you would have made it, though.
Yeah. We represented actually the first of the generation that had an alternate... source, alternate mediums. Alternate,
we represented all the producers on the Tonight Show, and they're all stoners. And so they didn't want us blowing their act. George Lopez really is the only show now that has us on. We were on just the other night, and we did great. Yeah. So at least we got our own talk show hero, you know, George Lopez. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a great show, man.
Yeah, we were never on TV. We never, you know, like they couldn't believe that we turned down a TV show because in those days, AM radio and TV were lame. You didn't, you know, if you wanted to have any kind of street cred, you didn't do those things.
Well, they have plenty of street cred then and now. They're on the Get It Legal Tour. Cheech Marin, Tommy Chong, thanks very much for being with us today.
Our pleasure.
Well, thanks for having us, man.
They joined us from our bureau at Culver City, California, NPR West. By the way, we will be doing some more programming on marijuana legislation with different points of view, so stay tuned to Talk of the Nation for that. Coming up, we're going to be talking with one of the great historical fiction writers going today. Bernard Cornwell will join us. His latest is another episode in the Saxon Tales. Stay with us for that. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.